When the work's all done next fall, my parents were footloose and free, except the feeding and not letting the gypsy tell his fortune when he was at a fair when he was a young man. And she told him, "You're going to have 9 daughters and die rich." After he was dead and gone, his firstborn daughter learned that after he had sold the North Dakota land, gas wells were struck all over it. She never did find out if the oil rights were still in his name. Anyway, he died rich in character. I had better get back to the North Dakota shanty, and because it's time for another birth. In the p.m. of March 31st, 1906, Rosalie was born. Papa had gone to get the midwife, and she was there, and he had Bernadette and me go upstairs, and he raised up the let-down ladder and hooked it. Ann Lou was 2 and too young to know what was going on or maybe taking a nap when our mother gave birth to a beautiful daughter. Papa then let the ladder down and told Bernadette and me to come down to see our baby sister. I remember standing beside the bed where my mother and this pretty baby lay and say, "That's not a baby, that's mine or Bernadette's big doll." It was sort of dusk by then and before the lamp was lit, and I really thought that. But she was a real baby sister, as my father said. I never knew him to tell a lie. The midwife stayed on for a while, and in due time, the new baby was taken to St. Anthony Church and baptized and christened Mary Rosalie. My mother had read a book about a girl named Rosalie, hence the name. She was taken to Mandan sometime during the summer to have her pictures taken. I was 4 years old and don't remember a lot about her. One thing, when she started walking and would toddle around, and every time the old clock would strike, she would say, "It's 8 o'clock, it's time to go someplace." She meant 8 when she said late. I was preschool age and footloose and free, and I don't remember much about what went on in the house. I was always, I remember we had pancakes for breakfast, and then I was out in the barn during the daylight and reading or looking at my pony book at night. I expect bedtime came early. I remember my father helped me to get ready for bed, took off my hair ribbons, and unbuttoned my dress in the back. I put on a long nightie. He taught me to say the Angel of God prayer, and he always heard my prayers beside the bed, and then he covered us up with the warm covers. As Bernadette and I grew older, a bed was fixed upstairs by the north window, and the snow would sift in through the window on our bedclothes, and one night my nose froze. Downstairs was a big stove in the north end and a cook stove in the south end. At night, the fire would die down. The ceiling was some sort of a plasterboard that was blue, and the nails that held them up had the heads like shining stars. I don't remember about the side walls. Outside, up so high, it was banked up with sod. The earlier houses were all sod and dirt floors, but ours had a floor and a wood. My mother was artistic and fixy, and I'm sure she had it looking real neat. I was more interested in my stick horses than that. One time when I went to the Missouri River in the bobsled with Papa, we got the wood to burn, but I found the most beautiful red sticks, and when I got home I tied ribbons on them, and they were my prized stick horses. To be sure they were protected, I kept them upstairs all lined up in a row. Papa had bought me a horse, and he was all mine. I named him Bluebell. He was blue in color and had a big knot on one ankle. The day of the sale, when I had to watch old Bluebell being sold and taken away, I also had to go away and leave my stick horses all lined up facing the west wall upstairs. I told them goodbye several times, and after we loaded up in the neighbor's wagon to leave, I went back to tell them goodbye once again. After we came back to Missouri to live, I was homesick for our home in North Dakota. When I would hear the morning doves, my heart would ache, and I could see my stick horses all lined up waiting for me. Bluebell was a gentle old kind horse and did whatever I wanted him to do. I had a board I hitched to him, and he would pull me around. One time I tried to get him to climb up the straw stack, and he tried so hard, then he fell backwards, barely missing me on the board. But I was on the board behind him. Papa kept an Indian pony for Bernadette. They were spotted and quite wild, which pleased Bernadette. She was never interested in Bluebell, neither was anyone else, so I had him all to myself. When I started school, which was maybe in the fall of 1908, I rode behind Bernadette on that Indian pony. He had a cute way of jumping to one side so I would fall off. Also, he was quite good at running, and I was always frightened of what Bernadette or the pony might do, and I was always glad to get home to my gentle old Bluebell. Now it's February 1908 rolled around, and nature designed that a new baby be born to Dell and Gertrude Jarbo. Before the break of day on February 21st, Bernadette and I were awakened by our father asking us to go to the neighbor, the Pete Cosgroves, and ask Mrs. Cosgrove to come stay with Mama while he went for the midwife. No telephone. I was age six the day before, February 20th, and my mother had a birthday party for me. I was probably dreaming of the hair ribbons and the balls and things that I got as gifts brought to the party. But Papa hurriedly dressed us warm for the journey of a mile or so to deliver the message. There may have been a faint break of day, but I remember it as being quite dark. But worse than that, the coyotes were howling, and I was sure they would eat us and gnaw on our bones. Bernadette was 10 and not afraid. I never knew her to be afraid of anything. We arrived and were glad to see that the Cosgroves had the lamp lit and were up. Mrs. Cosgrove, I can't think of her first name, was Irish and became quite hysterical over the fact that her neighbor and friend was in labor. And while hurrying to get off, she was yelling at the top of her voice, giving orders for Pete, her husband, to make pancakes for their three little boys and Bernadette and me and all the things that had to be done. Before we left home, I heard the moans of my mother in childbirth, and I thought she was going to die. And when Mrs. Cosgrove started screaming, I knew that she knew that my mother was going to die. Not long afterwards, we got the word that a baby girl had been born. She was given the name of Della Gertrude, named for both her parents. The Cosgrove boys were named Willie, Elmer, and Johnny. After Bernadette and I finished breakfast, they got on some ponies and started chasing the cattle. The cattle became frightened and started running, and the two kids ran them like sheep killing dogs until they ran them clear out of the country. No fences, just a range, except the lot fences. I'm sure Bernadette got most of the blame because she was older while Willie was my age, and I thought he was my beau. I had kissed him behind the door one time. Della Gertrude had big brown eyes, almost black, and was the sixth daughter. I heard my father jokingly tell someone that their friend of theirs, that they named her for both of them because they thought she might be the last one. She was the last to be born in North Dakota. I wanted to tell something about before we left North Dakota. My mother decided it was best to wean Della. She had nursed her until she was almost two, and I was seven and going on eight. But I so well remember the weaning. Mother was sitting in a rocking chair, the only one. Maybe there was more, but I don't recall only one rocking chair. She had blackened her breasts with stove polish, and Della was sitting on her lap. She showed Della the blackened breasts, and Della's big brown eyes gave a hard look. Then she bursted out in a heartbreaking cry. Bernadette and I laughed. I'm sorry to this day that I laughed. The poor little thing was heartbroken. But she had gotten to be such a mama baby that we didn't want her to do that, so that's the reason we laughed. On December the 14th, 1909, it was Bernadette's 12th birthday, and before Della was two in February, we started back to Missouri. This time they made a move. Everything was sold. Furniture, livestock, machinery. Oh, they brought the old clock and the silverware and a lot of things like that. But the sale of of course, we brought all our clothing. I remember this great big box that came from Sears and Roebuck, and it was a new clothes for all of us, a complete new outfit. We had nice clothes, but never all of us had a new outfit at one time. But that was for our how do you do back in Missouri, in Kansas, which my parents had, where my parents had lots of relatives and friends. Someone told me about 10 years later that people were impressed at how nice we all looked. I can still picture the coats we five girls had. Bernadette and I had crushed plush. Bernadette's was black and mine was brown. Ann Lou had the navy blue wool, and Rosalie's was red curly, and Della's was light blue curly. All wool, I'm sure. In those days, it was either wool, cotton, linen, or silk. A neighbor, the Krutzingers, came to the sale prepared to take us and all of our luggage to their house for the night. The next day, Mr. Krutzinger took us to Mandan to catch the train for Shelbina, Missouri. Having to change trains in Chicago, Mrs. Krutzinger was crying as we were leaving. She had fixed us a lunch to eat on the train, and Della got choked on the yolk of a hard-boiled egg, and we thought she would choke to death before we could get any water for her. I remember waiting in the depot in Mandan, and a train man in a sing-song voice called out, "All aboard for Chicago, train on track two." That was our train, and we hustled around to get on it. We had a sleeper, and Bernadette and I were on the top bunk with Papa on the outside edge so we wouldn't fall out, and Mama on the lower edge with Ann Lou, Rosalie, and Della. I don't expect they slept much. It was daylight when we did reach Chicago, and we had to wait before our train to Shelbina came. Mama had most all the money, quite a sum, in her pocketbook. And in the depot, she was sitting by a big fat woman with some kids. And when Mama got up, her pocketbook was gone. They kept looking for Ed, and the big fat woman just sat there and stared right straight ahead. And Papa thought she looked suspicious, and he yelled at her, "Get up!" She did, and the pocketbook was behind her. She had scooted it behind her while Mama wasn't looking, and all the fat had it well hidden. We were in the depot long enough that Bernadette got chummy with some kids about her age, and they were discussing who was the biggest, and she stuck her foot out and said, "But I've got the biggest foot." I think she wanted them to notice her new shoes. It was night when we arrived in Shelbina, and we went to the Waverly Hotel. The next morning for breakfast, they had fried mush, and I kept asking for more, and my father laughed, as I had never had fried mush because there's no corn grown in North Dakota. Mama's sister Agnes was married to Albert Kendrick, and he came to the hotel to get us in the sled. Just as we were in front of the Martin Buckman home, my father, who was on the spring seat with Uncle Albert, stood up and said, "Whoopee, what is that?" Uncle Albert had, and then Agnes had built a great big new house that summer and didn't tell them. They had never written and told Mom and Papa because they wanted to surprise them, because they knew they were coming back. I can't remember another thing about the big new house that Aunt Aggie and Uncle Albert's when we got there. But a memory of the big Martin Buckman home never left my mind. It was the first big house in the country I had ever remembered seeing. In North Dakota, the shanties were not very big. Maybe a 12-year-old boy, who would later be my husband, was there somewhere watching us go by. Maybe the Martin Buckmans had heard the Kendricks were having company from North Dakota. The Jarboes with five girls. The remainder of December and part of January spent visiting the many relatives. Albert and Will Kendricks, Cousin Jenny Saunders, the Harry Saunderses, and Uncle Will and Aunt Henrietta Saunders, and Harry and Maud Buckman. Before I go on, I'll have to tell you about us visiting Harry and Maud Buckman and their four boys. The five girls were a target for the four boys to tease. If we ever went to the back house, the outside toilet, there was a flurry of corn cobs being thrown at the small belly with a bang, bang. We also visit Aunt Sally Taylor and Uncle Sid Taylor. Back to the Harry Buckman boys. After supper, the four boys would play cards. Leo, the youngest, would always demand that whatever he had must be trumps. And if the other boys disagreed with him, he would say to his father, he'd say, "Har, ain't clubs trumps. And whatever he had the most of, that's what he said was trumps." And Harry would always interrupt his visit with my father and say, "Well, sure." The other boys were disgusted because it wasn't Leo's time to bid. Harry and Maud had been the couple who stood up with my parents when they married, so they were quite close. Anyway, Maud Saunders, and she was a first cousin of my mother. We got to Grandpa Jarboe's for Christmas. A great preparation had been going on as Brother Dale's family were there. Mama had made new dresses for mine and Bernadette's big dolls. It was supposed to be a surprise, but I'd peeked over the long, winding stairway and saw her making them in the hall where the sewing machine was. This is the first time I had ever told that secret. Many of the relatives were invited to the Christmas Eve supper in the long dining room where the big green Christmas tree stood. Mama and Papa seemed to be overjoyed about all the carrying on. And I'm sure Bernadette was, too. But I had an ache in my heart because this wasn't traditional for Christmas, as we had always been just us, and our tree was a good-sized sprout of bare limbs, all wrapped in cotton. No cedar nor no pine grew up in North Dakota. And we would quietly hang up our stockings and go to sleep, and the next morning Santa had been there. And oh, what a joy. I always got a doll, and I remember one Christmas morning I held my new dolly tenderly and skipped the full length of the home to the back door and back again to the Christmas tree. My heart overflowed with joy. The relatives are trying to decide who we look like, and this upset me. Aunt Amanda, Papa's sister Amanda, she always baked a fruit cake with that 1/2-inch caramel icing. She had sent one to us in North Dakota for Christmas. She always made them in January and kept them wrapped in a cheesecloth dipped in whiskey till Christmas came. I'll never forget how good they were. Also, one Christmas, Grandpa Jarboe sent us a 5-gallon can of sorghum molasses. That was a great change from the brown sugar syrup. After Christmas, we left Missouri to visit Mama's parents and relatives in Kansas. We went on the train, and Grandpa and Uncle Johnny met us in a sled. We stopped by Owen's store, and I spied a doll. And she was the most beautiful doll, and I wanted her so much that I cried because I was told no. They couldn't buy all the five of us something, so they had to say no. But to this day, I'll remember how much I wanted that doll. But several years afterwards, when I went back to Kansas to go to school, Aunt Ludy gave me one that looked just like her. that her little girl Gertrude had gotten for Christmas that she didn't want. After the round of had been made visiting Kansas relatives, Papa knew he had better get back to Missouri to make plans for a home. I told him I wanted to go with him, so we took off on the train from St. Paul, Kansas to either Paris or Monroe City, I think it was Paris, on the MKT Railroad, where Roland Reed could meet us. We were on the train overnight, and I went to sleep in the chair car with my father. I awakened and he was gone. He had gone to the toilet, but I made a quick decision that he had gotten off at the station where we had just stopped. So I decided the best thing for me to do was to jump off of the train and walk back to where he was. My mind was made up as to that was the best thing to do when he showed up. I don't think I told him what I had planned, but whenever I thought of it after, I think what a horrible thing it was, and the wild animals could have dragged my body off and no one never would have known what ever happened to me. After Papa and I got to Missouri and stayed at Grandpa Jarbo's while Papa made arrangements with his father to buy the farm where he and Mama started housekeeping. And it was decided by Aunt Agnes and Aunt Amanda that I would start the school there close by, the North Fork School, where my father had gone. I wondered why in the tarnation I didn't stay in Kansas, as there I was in school and Bernadette was footloose and free. Every night Aunt Agnes saw that I did my homework, and she sat there glad to show her authority, and she sat there with a pencil in her hand, and she'd whack me across the fingers every time I would write something incorrect, and that was too often. I was sort of a dreamer and a slow kid, and every morning Aunt Amanda would call from the foot of the stairs and say, "Make haste, breakfast is ready." Papa was busy getting the home prepared for Mama and the other girl, all of us girls, and we had to start from scratch to hunt up household things as well as horses and mules and machinery and start farming. Aunt Sally Taylor gave us some nice furniture, and Uncle Sid gave us a mare named Old Bird to ride to school. I don't think Bernadette started to school at Wright that spring, but I finished at North Fork. That was the spring of 1910. We finally all got gathered together, and time went on until September the 20th, 1911. Daughter number 7 was born, and she was named Lillian Magdalene. Mama said she was the prettiest one she had had. She always said Lillian was Saunders. That was the blood on her mother's side. Mama had her, Papa named her. Lillian was for his niece, Lillian Lashley, his sister Josephine's daughter, who had died when she was about 16. She had the measles and died from some complications. Oh yes, now I remember that the name of Aunt Josephine's baby, who had died, was Ashley Lashley. Now I have a great granddaughter named Ashley. She is Laura and Gary McElroy's daughter. In 1911, I was 9 and a half and was going to school at Wright. I guess 3 of us were riding Old Bird by then, Bernadette, Frances, Van Lou. Papa had called Grandma Kelly. She was Charlie Kelly's grandmother, but about everyone called her grandma. Anyway, we had a telephone. And he had Uncle Tim or Aunt Hannah stop us there on the horse and keep us overnight, and he's afraid we would get home before the baby was born. I don't think I knew there was going to be any baby, but I expect Bernadette did, as she was 13 plus. I don't think we heard about the baby until the next evening when we got home. Papa's sister, Aunt Agnes Reed, was there to help out and boss. Bless her heart, she was good at that. Now there were 6 girls. Lillian was the 7th birth, but Lucille Bell had died, and she was had been born and died in this same home, the honeymoon home where Mama and Papa started homemaking in 1897. Lillian fit right in with the rest of us brown-eyed girls, all brown-eyed except Ann Lou. Her eyes were steel gray, just like Papa's. Later, when she was old enough to teach school and went out west, her eyes got some shades of yellow and tan in them. Papa's always stayed steel gray, very pretty. Christmas came in 1911, and we had lots of pretty cedar trees on our farm, and we girls would go out and cut it down and bring it in home. Bernadette always did all the decorating. It always had real candles, and Mama made on Christmas morning, Mama would always light the candles and let them burn for a while and then blow them out. She always had a bucket of water near in case one caught fire. There was always dolls, dolls, dolls. My father always showed interest, but in later years, I wondered if he wouldn't have liked to have had some things that boys play with under the tree, like a knife or something like that. He always liked girls. Boys made so much noise for him. Oh yes, Ann Lou reminded me that Della used to have a doll she called Baby Bump. In the summer of 1912, Mama's sister Nora and her husband, Bernard Cavanaugh, came from St. Paul, Kansas. They came to visit us. Together they're closer. Yeah. How far is it, sir? Oh, I forgot to tell. I'm going back to North Dakota now. While we were in North Dakota, and when Pop would haul the wheat to Mandan, he'd always bring us something, some kind of a treat when he'd come home. It would be a basket of grapes, apples, or cheese and crackers. We older kids would try to wait up for him, and when we would hear the wagon, we would run to the barn to see him. He was always gone of mornings when we got up. One time he brought home an Edison phonograph with round disc records. It was one of the first that came out. It had a great big horn with morning glories painted inside. We'd all gone to sleep before he came home that night, and we were awakened by the sound of the new phonograph playing the record entitled "Just Because I'm from Missouri." It went just like this. "Just because I'm from Missouri, everything goes wrong. Hard luck finds me in the morning and stays the whole day long. Anything good could find me, never. So goodbye for me, amen. Just because I'm from Missouri," we certainly enjoyed that music maker, and with a diamond needle. It had records like "Over the Waves," and "I Wonder Who's Kissing Her Now." I can't remember any more of them right now. My parents loved music and sang a lot. Papa played the fiddle and the harp. Each of his girls inherited the love of music.
Come here. Down here, from here?
No. Yes, come in here. Are you sick? Or did you right away till in the morning and listen to it? Oh yes, today is my birthday. Today is February 20th, 1984, and I am 82 years old. So I came to Rock and Bruce's yesterday, and they had a big dinner for us. And Madge and all of her children, all seven of her children, and all of my children.
All her grandchildren.
All of my children except Guy and Jane were here. And Madge stayed all night, and today Veronica took Madge and me to Quincy. And Madge said, I told them that my father said I was born just as the sun went down. So I told him I wasn't 82 until just as the sun went down. Then I told him now I'm 82. So Madge began to sing "Happy Birthday." Oh, she's going to say, get her. That's a timid little darling. She's not going to say a word. But we sure had a lot of good things to eat. We shopped around Quincy. We didn't get home till about 5 o'clock, and then the
roses.
Oh my goodness, the lovely cake that Cynthia made me. My granddaughter Cynthia had made this beautiful cake, and it said to grandmother and to mother, to grandmother, and to great grandmother. My children, my grandchildren, my great grandchildren. A lot of them are here. And each one of them brought a rose.